I love this place. I love my horse.
Look out. Let me handle it.
Damn it. Do you suppose it's real?
Hell no. That's not supposed to happen.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's part of the thing.
The hell, goddamn machines, anyway! That's not supposed to happen.
A rattlesnake struck a guest?
Yeah, he was shooting at it. He missed.
And so the snakes are programmed never to hit on a strike. Was the guest injured?
His minor puncture wounds.
Inexcusable to injure a guest. Pick up that snake for a total post at once and check all the snake central mechanisms tonight during the repair period. Isn't anything we work around here?
So, Mark, this is Wes.
Hey,
you are. You're Mark.
I'm Mark, and we're
but
walking
not just
down the
Mark.
Street.
You're
Mark Bernay, and I'm world famous.
Okay, and we're walking down the street in downtown San Francisco, about to go into the
Apple Store.
The what store?
The Apple Store.
Okay.
And we mainly want to find out what's going on with the in-ear headset.
Okay. So, we're blocking people as we go in.
Right.
Okay. So the goal is that we just want to figure out what the status of the headphones that have the microphone built in.
Right.
That they keep promising us
the in-ear, because the iPhone comes with such a thing. We're talking about the in-ear ones that shove way up your ear.
Where are they shoved?
Way up your ear to block out extraneous.
You never sent me the file.
Oh, were they supposed to?
You never sent me the way.
Did we talk about that? Was that
your
talked about in the
cheese? Oh, we did. No. Yeah, we did.
Okay, I should have said to the phone.
Okay.
Oh, look, they have 3G iPhones now.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow. $199 to $299. That's kind
but of stuff. But it's got a rounded back that looks kind of funny. I'm not really sure that that's something that I could actually, like...
Yeah, like, it looks kind of slippery, like it'll just fall
right
in your hand.
They're getting smaller and smaller.
I think it'll just slip right under your hand.
All right, we're BSing. We gotta go figure out. We gotta go ask somebody.
Okay.
How you doing?
Hi.
Hi. Do you sell the iPhone case that has a little lens that flips in there to teleport in a macro mode?
I've seen that before.
It's on your website. The Apple website sells it.
Yeah. We don't carry that in store.
So I want to see what it looks like. Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you guys have the headphones with the microphone?
The new ones?
Yeah. Not yet?
They're promising them for 2 months. You know.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea when they're going to come out?
No. What?
Do you have any idea when they're going to be released?
I have no idea.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Is it waiting because of software issues with the iPhone or something? Or
I don't know. I think maybe they're still testing it.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You know when 2.2 is going to come out for the iPhone?
So there's the accessories over there.
Well, can you say, where do you keep your in-ear headphones and all that? What do you mean they're not out there? Let's go to Yacht Club Cougar.
You're lying to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that he wouldn't admit to any kind of a date means...
Because they used to. They used to
commit
to dates, yeah.
It means they're having problems, and they're probably not going to ship anytime soon.
My guess is that the headphones are fine, but they don't want to ship them without the remote control working in the iPhone, so they're probably waiting for 2.2 to ship, and maybe it'll have the stuff to use the remote control. That's kind of my total guess.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Greetings, everyone. This is Wes.
And this is the world-famous Mark Bernay.
And
for the second time tonight, we almost started recording somewhere else, but it was too noisy.
Right. That is true. For those of you who joined us, we're actually... We spent a few minutes in the Apple Store talking to some of the Apple people about the product that both Mark and I are really looking forward to.
Right.
Which is what? What is that product, Mark?
The new in-ear headphones with a microphone and a remote control on the cord.
So for about, what, 2 months, they've been saying that they're coming, and they're not.
Hello. Oh, fine, thanks.
Good, thank you.
So are you set?
I'm set, but...
I don't want to rush you if you still want another meal.
Actually, I'm ready, I guess. I'll take the tagliata special.
Tagliata special?
Which for a recording is grilled skirt steak with green peppercorn sauce and roasted potatoes.
Oh, really
okay.
Good.
Okay.
And I'm going to stick with my favorite, the gemelli.
You want to split a salad or anything?
I'm okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so this is a Slurpcast, which is a podcast that you record during dinner. where you slurp your soup and slurp your food and stuff like that in the microphone. I just don't care.
Right. You know? But we do have an unofficial mission statement that we tend to talk about.
Right. We talk about the latest technology, especially phones and phone phreaking and iPhones and stuff like that. And if possible, try to relate it back to some historical technology item or pre-technology item if we really find something relevant or whatever.
Yeah, my idea behind new advances in technology is that usually new technologies have a foundation somewhere in the past. So there's, you know, these ideas, in most cases, in my experience, they're not new. They're not really new ideas. They come out of things that have happened or tried to happen.
Yeah, as an example, the iPhone is kind of flat and stuff, and they used to carve on stones. Which, speaking of iPhones, I'm probably getting GSM noise in the microphone. Let me take it out of my pocket. But anyway, so like a stone tablet is really exactly the same concept as an iPhone, where you have a pointer and you point at the rock and you kind of hit it kind of a little bit harder than maybe you'd hit the iPhone. And you write things on it.
You're taking it a little too far, Mark. Okay. I don't know if I follow that one so much. But anyway. So, pesto. We got pesto. We're eating today at a chain. Not necessarily the most fancy place. I think this is probably like the most quote-unquote ghetto restaurant that we've ever been to.
For a chain restaurant.
Which is Pasta Pomodoro. And we're actually eating at the Rockridge location of the chain.
Right.
The Rockridge branch. And this is actually one of the nicer Pasta Pomodoro branches.
The First Lady likes them.
Well, I've actually had some bad experiences with Pasta Pomodoro as well, as my friends. They've also, some of them have had some issues with it. So I kind of hesitated for a moment, but.
And we'll review the restaurant at the end briefly, but this is a chain. There's probably not that much to say, really, but.
Yeah, it's the same. It's okay. Now I'm trying to log into my internet connection, my MySpace here, to pull up the weekly poll.
Okay.
We didn't do one last week, so my goal is
couldn't really find someone good enough, I guess. But
well, no, I think I was lazy, or actually I was late.
Okay.
So.
Well, while you're doing that, forgot to mention one thing.
Okay.
We own Slurpcast.com, and there's a blog on Slurpcast.com that's behind each of these audio podcasts, where we give the exact URLs that you can click on for anything we talk about or any corrections or additions or things that we think about later show up in that blog.
So last night I was watching an awesome science fiction movie, fairly old, sometimes in the, I guess, late 70s, a movie by the name of Westworld, which is a Michael Crichton.
What's your name? Westworld, isn't it? West. Oh, you mean West?
Yes, Westworld.
I see.
It was a Michael Crichton. You're supposed to get mad that I said... There you go. Okay.
Yeah,
many people go, what? Crichton? What are you talking about? Yeah. Spelled Crichton. Awesome movie. It needs to be remade.
Right. But he's dead. They can't be remaking. He's dead.
Well, he's dead, but they could remake the movie.
Okay.
There's
a fair amount of crime that happens on Craigslist, and I don't think it's Craigslist's fault whatsoever, because I still do kind of run an open conference line and stuff, but just anytime you hook people together randomly for anything, there's going to be some criminals around. And anytime people meet in a restaurant, anytime people read through classified ads, or anytime people meet for any reason, there's a certain percentage of things that are going to lead to some crime.
Okay.
So I think Craigslist is unfairly targeted here. But anyway, if you're interested, there's a website, www.craigscrimelist.org, that
Nice. And
people can report crimes that happen to them on Craigslist, and
okay.
they try to track it down, get some information about it and stuff.
Okay. Now, this is geared towards things that happen on Craigslist only?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to start with some computer history here.
Okay.
Once again, going back to the vintage tech.
Okay.
Computer history database. Ted Nelson coins the term hypertext in 1965. He foresees that millions of people will be publishing hypertext on a worldwide network at a time when few people understood the idea.
Probably 10 elite people from college or something.
Let alone why people would want to self-publish electronically.
Hmm.
His writings describe new paradigms and tools for a system of non-sequential writing that would allow the reader to aggregate meaning in snippets in the order of his or her choosing, rather than according to a pre-established structure fixed by the author.
Hmm.
So.
But was that the predecessor of Gopher or anything? There's a thing called Gopher that was before the World Wide Web.
Well, this is hypertext. Yeah, this is what hypertext
Gopher
is based
had, Gopher
on.
Had links and stuff like that. So
I think initially, I'm not sure if it did. Did it? Yes, it did.
Yeah, Gopher was in a sense, a web-like thing where a document could link to other documents and stuff. Not anywhere near as flexible as the real web browsers that came out later.
You had to have a separate Gopher application running or some kind of server in order to support Gopher browsers or something.
Right, Yeah, there's the Gopher program that the user would run. There's Gopher servers. And Gopher was around for a long time. Even after HTML and web servers came out, there's still a lot of data that companies had in Gopher servers. You kind of had to switch back and forth and stuff for a while.
Huh.
Or I think web browsers could have used it instead of http://, if you did Gopher ://
right.
in some web browsers, they could handle the Gopher things directly.
Oh, even in the browser, huh?
Yeah, so without needing a separate program,
I remember being slightly confused by telnetting into my netcom.com account and using, links to browse the web.
Yeah, links is like a web browser, except it's all character-based. Yeah.
Was it Lynx? It was Lynx.
Lynx, L-Y-N-X. It's still around. Yeah, on line-by-line, on command-oriented Unix systems and Linux systems and stuff, they still typically have a Lynx command.
Yeah. What's not used on many different Linux systems is Pico.
Right. It's around some. I have it for the iPhone.
Do you? Pico?
Really? For jailbreak iPhone, they have, it's called Nano. Whoever wrote it, the Pico clone is calling it Nano, but it kind of acts like Pico. So,
That's interesting. Let's see.
So that's an example. If you want to know how to get Nano for your iPhone, go to slurpcast.com, and I'll fill in the details of anything we talk about in the recording that.
Well as I'll throw in random links about things that I talk about.
Then I get all pissed off because then it takes me a lot longer to search all the stupid links and build that stupid blog entry, but it's okay.
But I do that
we
too.
We do it for you,
yes,
the
we
audience.
Do. I spend several days doing the audio editing the filtering, and then posting, compressing, and adding, finding pictures and adding them to the MP3 file.
And then I tend to be the one to look up all the links for all the stuff we talked about in the show.
Including double-checking my work and correcting errors that I might make.
Right.
Okay, so I'll do a quick story here.
Okay.
Nokia adds support for Lotus Notes and Symbian S60.
Boring.
First of all...
Boring.
Why?
I know.
Second of all, Lotus Notes...
Well, there are people... There's a lot of corporations still use Lotus Notes. I've never personally used it. I see a lot of people don't like it for a lot of reasons, but... It's very popular in large corporations.
I think it has to do with the deals that IBM makes with these corporations I have to say it's like one of the worst pieces of software that I've ever used for any kind of emailing or calendaring.
And you have the latest versions?
I use the latest versions.
Yeah.
But it's just things that you would normally assume would work one way don't work that way in Lotus Notes.
Okay.
And features like setting up responses vacations. I'm going on vacation. Mm-hmm. Everybody sends me a message. I'm going to respond to them.
Right.
Unintuitive.
Okay.
Filters are difficult to figure out how to work with. And this is all the latest Lotus Notes.
But it's really not Lotus. It's really owned by IBM now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a trend for companies who buy software companies it's almost like... This happened with Apple and eMagic when they purchased eMagic and they worked on the Logic Audio software. as well as, let's see, Sony when they bought Acid.
Okay.
These products were absorbed into the companies, but never really revolutionized from that point on. So the updates that you received were like, you know, bug fixes.
Yeah.
And maybe new minor features were added, but there was nothing like revolutionary. Whereas if the company that wrote it kept working on it, generally you'd have leaps and bounds that were made to the software.
Yes.
This is sort of how I feel about Lotus. It's always just been sort of
bad. Is it still called Lotus Notes? Does the latest version actually say that?
Yes.
The word Lotus is still in there?
Mm-hmm.
Because Lotus was a very old, early day PC, and before PC, just CPM. Lotus, no, you know what? So Lotus really came up with a very popular spreadsheet.
Right.
But
not VisiCalc.
But VisiCalc was first. But no, wasn't VisiCalc first?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then, what was the Lotus spreadsheet called then? Lotus 1-2-3. Yeah,
oh,
Lotus spreadsheet
is
called 1-2-3. Yeah, that was for the PC only. I don't think that ever existed for CPM.
Okay, that was but big. That was their main product, I think.
Right.
Yeah, Lotus was a company by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Funny.
So anyway, just kind of guessing back from history. I bet when Microsoft came out with Excel, that probably what killed Lotus 1-2-3.
Yeah, that was what everybody was talking about. That's what, if you look back in history, there are often timelines that show when Microsoft decided to compete.
Right.
They totally dominated that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even the Timex Sinclair had something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called ViewCalc or...
Right. The VisiCalc or the spreadsheet concept was a totally new invention.
Right.
For CPM machines, nothing like that had ever existed in the world, where you could have a two-dimensional mathematical calculating engine, and some results would feed off of other results and things like that.
Right.
So people didn't really care about CPM at first. When the early day machines came out, or just hobbyists thought it was fun to play with, but we never would have gone anywhere in business, except for the invention of VisiCalc, and there's no way to get VisiCalc unless you buy some computer.
Ah.
You know, so that was the, we call the killer application of the early day personal computers and especially the CPM ones, was that they had that. And then word processing became popular. Things like that. I suspect Apple is probably responsible for the word processor because they invented the concept of having lowercase characters in your computer. No one really thought about that anymore. Apparently Steve Jobs insisted that people would use these newfangled computer things for writing, and then therefore insisted that they had lowercase characters in the early day Apples.
What? So that was an Apple thing? No,
but supposedly, because
who says that?
I just read that somewhere, but it kind of makes sense.
Okay.
Because the early day computer terminals and stuff like that often had uppercase only.
And
supposedly Jobs insisted that the Apples have lowercase as well because he had the idea that people would use them for writing.
So do away with the arrow keys and the
right.
upper and lowercase.
You have a mouse. What do you need arrow keys for?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got a, as the world famous Mark Burnet,
yes,
I got an email from a reporter who was investigating the history of phone phreaking for an article he wanted to write, that a blind phone freak, modern day, I mean today, this year, of a blind phone freak was arrested partly for taking part in 911 fraud. I may be mixing him up with someone else, but I think he was part of this crowd.
Okay. We have to first of all explain what is 911 fraud. What's 911 fraud?
Well, first of all, 911.
We know what that is.
Yeah, some people would say 911, but that's really not appropriate for phone phrase. Phone phrase would, of course, say 911, or 911 or something.
Aspreth?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You have to throw in the Aspreth to be honorable to Albernay. So.
Mm-hmm.
So what people do sometimes nowadays is they call into a 911 center but fake the caller ID that the 911 center shows that they're a different phone and a different address.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make up some story to get the SWAT team to show up and talk about these people who just invaded our home and they're holding us, they're tying us up, or... making some kind of story like that.
That a SWAT team would show up for.
And then a SWAT team shows up, and the people shows up at your friend's house or you're in, hopefully your enemy's house, and they have to really do a lot of talking to get themselves out of it before the SWAT team shoots them or whatever, you know. So, you know, I mean, that's always a danger in a thing like that.
Right.
Someone could get killed easily enough.
All right.
So anyway, so he was, so this reporter calls up about this blind phone freak who was arrested, I think partly for things like that. And he wants to know the history of it, so I turned him on to a couple of old-time blind phone freaks who are still, I still know, mm-hmm. and stuff. And one of the questions he had for me is, what do I think about the fact that these modern-day kids are doing this? Surely in your age, in your day,
yeah.
you would just play with the phone system. You would never do anything like that.
And you shocked him by saying...
And I shocked him by saying, well, I don't know. We didn't know how to do anything like that. If we knew how, maybe we would have. I don't know. Maybe someone would have. It's hard to say. You know, because we did have enemies, and if you have an enemy, you can do that to them, can't you? And,
you know. So you get telephone gang wars.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the Bloods and the Crips of the public
so,
phone system.
So when that article comes out, I'll try to hopefully find out a link to it.
Mm-hmm. Do you know when it's going to come out?
No, no idea. But I will post a link right now to the article about the blind phone freak that got this guy curious about the whole field.
Hmm. There are signs that the economy, that people are saving money, whether it's because they need to or because they're just afraid that mm-hmm. they need to.
Right.
I know people are losing jobs.
Right.
But my visual has been the parking lot where I park my car in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
The number of cars that are there, it's fairly expensive.
Right.
Something like $7 a day to park there all day. I've noticed that like the cars are dwindling, and the passengers, right. the people who ride on BART,
right.
Seem to be increasing. It just continues to be very, very crowded. So I think people are trying to cut costs here, and that makes sense. I mean, $7 for parking when you could park in the BART parking lot.
Although BART's kind of expensive too, though.
Well, BART itself.
If they're going to take BART anyway, yes. But
it's a whole lot cheaper in the long run than driving into the city,
right?
Because you add wear and tear, plus the gas, plus the parking when you get into the city,
right?
And that's generally not expensive, not cheap.
That's true. A lot more than $7 a day. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, BART costs, in most cases, $1, and that's now added to your ticket.
For the parking lot?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So, for those who don't know, BART stands for Bay Area Rapid Transit. It's the
commuting system. Wes is talking about going into San Francisco.
Yeah.
Where Mark already lives. He doesn't have to commute to San Francisco.
Right. Mm-hmm. By the way, dude, did you buy enough X-Lax?
No. What? Mm-hmm. What?
I thought we're supposed to help make BART go faster.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
If you didn't buy enough, I'll pitch in.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. You could start on your end, and I can start on my end, and like,
right.
when BART's not running.
Okay.
We have like a, 3-hour window between,
yeah.
what, 2 o'clock in the morning and
no,
5 o'clock in
the morning? Last BART train would tend to go by most stations. Between midnight and 1 in the morning or something.
Well, yeah, so I figure if we start at 2, and you start in San Francisco, and I start in the East Bay.
We could do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, taking an awful lot of X-Lax.
Yeah, we could try. Yeah. What are you talking about, Wes?
Somebody needs to oil the tracks, though. I do have a problem with the sound that it makes in the morning.
In certain spots, yeah. BART has very tight curves in one spot.
Well, I mean, the tunnel is just loud, and I mean, I don't remember it always being that loud. Initially, when I started riding as a kid, it was quiet.
Yeah,
maybe they're just being
tracks
cheap.
And wheels just run out. They have to grind the tracks every once in a while and things like that. Yeah,
okay.
I don't remember what it used to sound like. They have gotten slower. When BART first opened,
mm-hmm.
they went 80 miles an hour. Maybe not in the tunnels. I'm not sure, but I think under the tunnel under the bay,
mm-hmm.
I think they went 80, and they certainly went 80 out to Concord and all the far away, boony places.
Yeah.
But then the trains were wearing out too fast, is my understanding, and then so they slowed it down to a maximum of 72.
Hmm.
And the trains were breaking down too fast at 80, even though that's what they were supposedly designed for. Yeah.
That's weird.
Good.
People ride in the morning, have their laptops, and sit, they tend to like bring their like large laptops and sit on the train and do code work and work. And what kills me is that like you'd have some really critically personal information or work related information on this huge like 20 inch screen. These laptops that are massive. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of lean over and look and see what they're doing in detail. Oh yeah.
Well, that's why people get those screens. You can buy screens that you put over in front of the laptop screen that has a bunch of little lines in it or something so that you have to look straight into it.
And oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure what technology they really use internally in these screens, but just, you know, kind of not really glue, but just squeegee it on like a decal or something, I guess, or like a screen protector, except that they have some directionality to them so you can only read it, the screen, pretty much straight on.
Yeah. Well, I was feeling the need to do after-hours work on BART as well as all the other people that have these massive laptops, and so I decided to kick down some money for what's called a netbook computer. And these are the small form factor type jobs, laptops. And so I went with HP's just because I've always felt HP did really, their form factors are always really solid.
Okay.
The screen's too small. And as you suggested to me when I first went out and got this, you told me, you said, Wes, hold off because a lot of other companies are going to be coming out with the same.
Is yours a 9-inch or a 10-inch? Do you know?
What's mine? Mine is a 10, maybe.
Okay.
It's equivalent to one of the EEPCs, although they have a 10-inch now as well.
Right. Okay.
So, I got theirs. And, when I first bought it, it does not use the Atom chip. It uses another chip that's the Vaya. And it overheats. And the first model, the first machine that I got, I had to send back because it would lock up due to the heat.
Okay.
So I swapped out the motherboard. And it's fine. It's okay now, although it has locked up on me twice since I've got it back in the past, 2 months. Anyway.
That could be software issues, though. It's so hard to say.
This was a motherboard issue. But
okay.
So anyway, so you're right. A lot of other manufacturers now make netbooks. One of them that everybody's looking at is not necessarily EEPC, but Dell.
Right.
And Dell has a new line of netbooks. Studio 15 and 17 laptops.
Okay.
These, I guess, they're equivalent. They're like, $349 and $549. It's the Mini 9 laptop that I'm talking about here. That's the low end. And they're really inexpensive. The EPCs and the HP 2133s, they're all like around $300 for the basic models. But you still can get a lot done with those, even the low end machines.
But you have to be careful about the battery life on the really small ones, you know, because they don't have much room for a battery in them. They must be very low profit items because stores don't sell them. Like you go to Fry's, they have just one, one and only one cheap netbook.
Well, what's interesting and what this article calls out is much like Apple Computer, you know how they come out with a product and then later on they allow customization options.
Okay.
So in other words, like the plastic. So they come out with one color device and then later on they'll come out with multicolor devices.
Okay.
So I expect like the iPhone 3G at some point to allow like rainbow colors and you choose.
Right.
That's just the case, but the actual plastics.
Okay.
So Dell is kind of doing that same sort of thing, only they're not offering just colors. They're actually offering artists' designs in the actual plastics.
Okay.
And the cost of these paint-jobbed minis will be only an extra $50. And I've seen some of the designs for these things. They're really pretty.
Well, I forget what it is. The Dell ones are just kind of specification-wise kind of boring. I didn't really like them that much, but they're pretty wide.
Almost all the netbooks are kind of like that.
Yeah.
And I think the HP, the one that I have, is pretty much like more power than you really need for a netbook.
Okay.
I've got like four gigs of RAM. Let's see, what do I have? It's got processors like a 1.5 gigahertz.
Okay.
Let's see what else. It has Bluetooth, it has Wi-Fi, G. What else? It's got the Express port.
Okay.
So all these things are they're really nice, and they make it more like a desktop computer. But I don't think they're that necessary.
Yeah.
Like Bluetooth in the laptop, I'm not sure how.
But
I
want
really
cellular. I see what you really want is like a cellular modem. Except the cellular modem service is very expensive. But
that would be your Express card.
Yeah, but some of them will have it built in.
Oh.
But something like a netbook, you particularly needed it. Would be particularly good with a cellular modem if the cellular service was cheaper. My GoPhone trick is apparently going away. Oh. There's a trick you can do right now. Actually, it's probably too late for new users right now, but I'm grandfathered for another 2 or 3 months of it, where you can use a SIM out of a GoPhone and a data adapter and get unlimited cellular internet for $19.95 a month.
Huh.
But that's going away. So apparently people cheat on it too much. It's meant for data on a little handheld handset GoPhone itself,
okay,
just so you could web browse or check email or something. And AT&T found out that some people plug the SIM of it into a modem card and use it for a notebook.
What?
So anyway, so they're dropping that so maybe even by now.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Well, so one more story, and then we're going to go on to the okay, iTouch and iPhone applications
okay,
reviews for the week. Frivolous lawsuits. Uh-huh. We should actually make this part of a section of the show. We can talk
There's
about
no frivolous lawsuits.
What? What are they all?
Some of the lawsuits people claim are frivolous win, and if it wins, it's not frivolous, was it?
So you know about unpaid time, right? As a contractor, yeah, you know you have to report. Yeah. You might be working for a company and have to like do right, certain things for the company where you don't get paid necessarily.
Yeah.
Well, there's lawsuits that have been filed against companies by employees. Some of them include Cigna, AT&T, and United Health
right,
Group,
uh-huh,
where they filed basically against these companies for unpaid time.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that what they're claiming is unpaid time is basically the time it takes for their laptops and desktop machines uh-huh, to boot up or shut down.
Well, but these are employees or contractors?
These are employees.
Okay.
So...
So you said contractors are first.
Well,
there is a difference.
Yeah, no, there is a difference. You're right, legally, but I'm, yeah, but these are actually employees, apparently.
Okay, no, but if they show up for work,
yes,
and once they show up for work, they're supposed to be paid. It doesn't matter what they're doing. So if they show up for work and they're sitting there at their desk, the fact that the thing they did is flip the on switch,
yes,
doesn't matter. The point is they're sitting at their desk ready to work.
Okay.
And they should be paid from that moment.
Huh.
You know, so yes, well, they should be paid for that.
Apparently it turns out that it can be, it's up to be, basically they're reporting it's like 15 to 30 minutes a day. So
okay,
you can be an employee and still have to report hours.
Yes.
So.
Of course.
So.
Well, more than a contract. Yeah.
Right.
Probably, but yeah.
And not get paid for certain things. You
not
check
as
in
an employee.
No,
as an employee, when you show up and you're ready, if you show up on the time, if you show up a half an hour early or something, just hanging
yeah,
around
yeah,
your company lounge, that's a different story. But if you show up and you're sitting at your desk ready to work,
okay,
as an employee, you're supposed to get paid starting from that moment. Yeah.
Okay, well, a lot of these employees, a lot of the companies are saying basically they're going to tackle each one of these cases independently,
right,
one at a time, and not like treat it as a huge, massive, yeah, what would you call that kind of a case?
No, but it's not even a frivolous thing. Because if you show up at your desk, you flip the switch.
Yes.
You're probably, number one, you are required to be at work to flip the switch. Let's say, if there's someone else go around flipping all the switches for you, and then you show up 5 minutes later, that's a different story. But if you show up at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And you're there
you
at work.
Getting paid.
And you should, and you're the one who flips the switch.
Right.
Your employer should give you other work to do while the machine's booting, but if they don't, that's too bad. I mean,
okay,
you're still there doing your job.
So it's not frivolous if they deny you those,
so,
those minutes.
No, I don't think so at
that's
all.
That's funny.
No.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is a recent thing or not, but I mean, as things like the economy go downhill, companies
yeah,
do want to kind of rein right, in the reins a little bit.
Yeah, but things like that are
report,
just going to get them sued, and
right,
they're going to lose a lot more money in the long run.
This is true, yeah.
For it, you know, yeah.
So I just thought that was really interesting, so I grabbed a hold of that article.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
So. Okay, so moving on to the applications. I'm going to let you
okay,
go first, Mark.
I have to go find one.
I'm not necessarily going to choose the most popular of the applications this time
yeah,
around. I'm going to call out two apps that are more productivity applications.
Well, if you want to start, and I'll search through. I
okay,
haven't really prepared, so I'll
okay,
search through all my billions of apps that I have.
Nice. Yeah. You remember the old Scott Adams text adventure games? I think
yeah,
we've talked about this before.
Right.
We talked. We did a show a little bit about talking about the pet Commodore Pet and how
right,
I grew up on Scott
right,
Adams Adventureland and
okay,
and did the Ghost Dump Go.
Well, that's not the same Scott Adams. I forget. That's not definitely not the same Dilbert Scott Adams. Right?
No. These are Scott Adams Adventure.
Yeah.
Adventure.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, so there's a an application that it does need improvement for the iPhone and iTouch, but it is fantastic in the sense
right,
that you can download games literally for free, text adventure games that exist that have
okay,
been archived and are posted
okay,
on certain websites.
Right.
And what's cool about the application is that a lot of these
Text adventure games are compressed mm-hmm. and stored within zip files.
Okay.
This actual application will search through the actual zip file, find the runnable engine or like what do you call it, compiled code, and then extract that out, download it, and allow and store it on your iPhone or iTouch. Okay. Anyway, the name of the application is called. It's trying to browse the web. I can't get that. Mm-hmm. It's called iFrotz, or no, Frotz. Mm-hmm. So just literally F-R-O-T-Z, interactive fiction at your fingertips. And I was able to, it comes with a few adventures when you download it. It's a free application.
But it is an official App Store application.
Yes, it is an
Apple
official.
Apple approves it and stuff
yep.
like that. Yeah,
and you can go, it's kind of hard to use the keyboard to play these adventure games, but they basically, essentially, the format for all of them is a verb and a noun. Like go north, go house, climb up, things like that.
Okay.
So those are like the trick keywords, and these are the original codes.
And they've got the original adventure that I like. And
yes,
we've talked about before that I like.
Yeah, this is all the original code that runs on this Zork engine or this Frotz or what do you call it? Z engine is what my understanding was.
Okay,
that's the original Infocom's. What do you call it? Yeah, it's the Infocom's interpreter.
But will they play the original adventure that was before that? That was long before that.
Adventureland. ADVLAND. Yes.
Yeah.
This is it. Adventureland.
But that's because it wasn't called Adventureland. It was just called Adventure at first. That is the original game.
Scott Adams code, circa 1980.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And there's a serial. This is release one, and serial number. Interpreter 1 version F, compiled by Inform V1404.
Okay.
You're in a forest. Obvious exits, north, south, east, west, and up. And then it says, you can also see trees.
That's not the way. The original adventure didn't start that way.
No?
Did it? I forget. I don't think it started that way. But.
Let's see. Adventure 65.
Yeah. I forget exactly how the original one. When we were talking about it the other week, I played with an online one for a second, but I forget how it started now.
Let's see. A voice booms out. Welcome to Adventure International's mini adventure sampler.
That's certainly not the original. Didn't have that. My God. Yeah.
Well, anyway, so this is good, and I expect that the application itself is going to get better because there's although it does play all these games, it's certain games require a call out for fonts that are kind of ugly, don't work well on the screen.
Right. Yeah,
but it does an amazing job of actually being very playable. So that's my free application. I think that's going to be something useful for people.
Okay.
I'll go to one more. Many people have been looking around for blogging applications for the iPhone and iTouch.
But
something.
How would you possibly type in a blog on that stupid keyboard?
Right. But, so, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for... I wish in the second generation iTouch that Apple would just go ahead and allow the Bluetooth chip inside the second generation that's used with the Nike Puck, which I don't even think is out yet.
I saw it. It was at the Apple Store.
Not for the second generation.
Oh, okay. Because the Apple Store had it. That wasn't the same thing?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I don't think it's out yet. I should have asked about that. But anyway, so so I wish they would just allow that to be universal, because apparently some people hacked into and got, basically broke open a second generation.
What kind of criminals would break into a device and hack it to do something else? That's crazy.
Well,
that's
ridiculous. Mark. What about your past?
What about it? That was a phone thing. That's an iPhone. Yeah. Okay, never mind.
Come on.
Yeah.
So the application that I've been looking for a good one that allows me to access a lot of different blogs that many people use.
Okay.
The one that I found that I'm pretty happy with is a program called iBlogger.
Okay.
There were two of them that kind of hit the top of the list for me. iBlogger was definitely the one that seemed to get more positive reviews.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
It works well with our
blog. With Blogger,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
It basically just to name a few of the ones that it works with. See here, Meta, Weblog, Movable Type, Blogger, Blogsome, Drupal,
expression engine.
You can post pictures and all that.
Yeah. LifeType, Living Dot, My Dot Opera, Squarespace, Typepad, WordPress, and Zanga.
But so, wait, but something in, you know, that last show was the first time I ever tried to post pictures to our blog.
Yes.
What's the thing, you know, when you post a picture, you will not post it in place. It just posts it at the top. And your only choice are, do you want it left justified, right justified, center, do you want the text to flow around it? But it totally ignores where your cursor is in your blog entry so far.
Okay.
It's as though you're expected to write a blog entry separately just for this picture. Because I had to go into the HTML editor, I had to find the HTML, I had to paste the picture at the top.
Uh-huh.
Find the HTML that it generated, then move that myself down,
okay,
down lower to where I wanted it, in order to get those multiple pictures down at the bottom of the blog entry.
Okay.
So what's with that?
I don't know. They're rich text editors in a lot of different tools like Wikipedia's, Confluence. Yeah. They're kind of odd. They're not all. Right. They don't all work like a desktop application. And I've experienced things like that with those, with all, you know, web-based rich text editor tools.
Right. Maybe we got a blog that we paid for. Maybe the other servers.
We could get something like a web crossing where we give out accounts,
right?
Or there's like some PHP tools that use like Ajax,
right?
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's things out there. We could do what's it called, Plone, which is a Python based system for free.
I'm just curious. Maybe I'm just missed something. But I sure couldn't figure out any way to legitimately have a picture show up.
I'm sure there are better ones than Blogger, but what was nice is I was able to take your images, just literally highlight everything.
Okay.
And because I guess maybe I was using the HTML, just copied it right out of the blog entry and pasted that into my tool that does the RSS feeds, and voila.
Right.
It did say that there was some non-standard HTML in there, and it said, "Do you want me to clean it up?" And I said, "Sure." So
it ended up working.
Worked fine. Yeah. So it was good. Okay. In fact, I was able to center images in the RSS feed as opposed to what was on the blogger on the blogspot.
Didn't they have a center? They're centered, aren't they? They're centered.
Yeah.
So at least they were centered at the top, and when I just moved the HTML exactly as it was.
Okay.
I thought they ended up centered, and they're automatically clickable. You can click on them and get the full resolution from my original $100 fine Kodak camera. That's actually a very good resolution. So,
okay. So that's it for my two applications. I may have one more.
I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, I've got a stupid audio one of the type I always like.
Okay.
Something else, maybe?
No. I think that's
we're
all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Oh, here.
Thank you.
I always like stupid iPhone applications more than I like useful ones.
I've got one. I've got a stupid iPhone.
Go ahead.
Do you want me to go?
Sure.
Okay, so you like Craigslist?
Yes.
Like a lot of people like Craigslist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So... I'll do the stupid one. This one's stupid, but there's a stupid one.
Okay.
Have you seen iHotness? Have you heard of iHotness?
I read the description of every application every day. Some point I saw it, but I don't remember.
Do you remember the web-based, back in the dot-com boom, there was a website that was kind of fun to play with because you could sit there all day long and just click certain things called Am I Hot or Not?
Yes.
I think it may still exist, where you could upload a picture and allow the public to simply rate you.
Right.
I think it started out as a yes or no, and then you could log back in and see how many people rated you as hot or not.
You know about the website I got to do a parody on that, don't you?
No, I forgot.
I've never used it. Okay. I always get these names and never use them. I own rankpussies.com.
That's right.
The concept of having pictures of kittens, and you rank the kitten, whether you like the kitten, whether the kitten is good or not. See. But anyway.
Well,
I never used it, of course. But,
iHotness is a free application. Basically, you upload a picture of yourself, and you can be very anonymous, so it's not a very personal thing.
Okay.
But you're ranked on a score of 1 to 10, and so once you put your picture up there, people, you know, it can be any. What I don't like is people put pictures of like their cat, their dog, you know, an ocean. Right. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of blank images up there, like somebody tried to upload a picture of themselves and didn't.
That's not the same. There was an application like a week ago or something that you post a picture of yourself and people would say what movie star you look like or something. But that's different, I guess. Yeah,
there's some facial recognition stuff like that.
I couldn't quite figure out whether it was automatic or whether you're just posting it and people are supposed to choose a star that you look like.
No, it was automatic. I think you told me about that.
Did I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
I didn't try it, so I don't know.
Okay. And then last but not least, I'll do the last one too. Kind of silly, but it actually is going to become, if the developer continues to work on it, it's going to become significant. It's called Craigs Mobile. Control.
Okay.
It's an application for your iPhone and iTouch that basically organizes and downloads all of the Craigslist information for
channels. Well, that could be useful if you're actually looking for something.
Yes, for channels of your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's smart enough to know what options are available if they differ from channel to channel.
I could segue into something from here, but anyway, go ahead.
So I've been using it, and it's really nice.
Right. Okay.
It's
a peace sign.
What's that? What?
I saw a peace sign.
That's what Craig's is all about.
Okay.
Yeah. Fostering peace, allowing everybody to communicate and mingle and get together.
But I wore a peace button at one point when I was in high school.
Yeah.
I wore a peace button for a while, and of course I would take it off and before I got home, because I wouldn't want my parents to know that I had this radical thing. Right?
What? You mean you told your
parents
to know that you were like
that
promoting
I wore
peace?
Yes. So one day I forgot to take it off, and I show up at home wearing this badge. I remember my mother getting all panicky about, what is that? What color? Is that some organization? Do you have to go to meetings? Do you have to give the money? Do you have to go to meetings? What is that? And all that.
Nice. That's cute. So for people who might want some sort of nice and easy way to navigate and browse Craigslist channels, this is a very cool app. It does cost. I think it's something like $2.
$2?
Yeah.
But Craigslist is free. Why would you pay $2 for an app to...
Well, that's to motivate the developer to make it better.
Yeah.
So that's it for me.
So it's letting me segue into something that has nothing to do with the iPhone. but this is a telephone item. A long time ago, there's a voice over IP provider that I never actually quite bought any lines from, but I read their newsletter, and one of these days I probably will, called Les.net, L-E-S.net.
Okay.
It's a guy named Les something or other in Canada who personally runs this voice over IP service for Asterisk and a bunch of other services.
Okay.
And he had in his newsletter once that he had phone numbers available for Craigslist verifiers.
What?
Okay. And he had some word for it. It was Craigslist something or other, that he had the special class of phone numbers for Craigslist something or other.
Okay.
And they had no idea what he was talking about. So I sent him an email asking what that's about. He said for certain categories of Craigslist, Craigslist wants to call people back and verify that the ad is legitimate.
Okay.
So there are services where if you want to place an ad in these categories, rather than giving out your own phone number, you give out the phone number of a service, an answering service-like thing that gets all these different phone numbers from Les.net, so Craigslist won't notice that everyone's using the same phone number.
Okay.
And then so you post just some random number in this whole pool in your Craigslist ad. Craigslist calls the person back, and an answering service answers and says, "Oh yeah, that's me. I'm going to post it." Right?
Okay.
So I still didn't know what that was about because I never really heard of that category. But then a week or two ago, there's some items that Craigslist is going to start charging for sexual services ads. And demand a real phone number and stuff like that.
Okay.
That the Craigslist was getting complaints that people were posting prostitution ads, if you can believe it, in the sexual services section.
Oh,
that the district attorneys around the country were bothering them about that.
Okay.
So I say they first went to that verification service. It turns out that's what the Les.net numbers were for.
Okay.
Is to get the sexual services ads approved without the sex worker giving out the real phone number.
Okay.
Right? But that wasn't enough. So apparently Craigslist is going to start suing those companies, maybe Les.net for all I know, but they're going to start suing the companies that do those fake verifications. And also they're demanding that any sexual services ads have to be paid for with a valid credit card. They're not going to charge very much, and they're going to donate all the money to charity, but Craigslist is going to charge for items in that category with a credit card, again, to prove that you're a legitimate person so you can be tracked down if there's any crimes through it and stuff.
Huh. Weird.
Anyway, I know. But it finally closed out for me the story about Les.net and what they were talking about with their special category of phone numbers and stuff.
Wow.
So, anyway.
Nice.
So, anyway, so for a stupid app of the week, I'll have to figure out a serious one. Sniff_Jazzbox. That's the way it's spelled. It's in the App Store as Sniff_Jazzbox.
Is it free?
It's not very much. I wouldn't have paid very much for this, trust me. It's at most a dollar or two. I forget. So what it does is you start it up, and it sniffs all the Wi-Fi. You have to have Wi-Fi turned on.
All right.
Actually, let me do that.
Otherwise, okay.
Yeah, let me turn on Wi-Fi actually. But anyway, so if Wi-Fi is turned on, it searches all of the access points in your neighborhood. It doesn't try to log into them. It doesn't really care anything about them. It just searches that they're there.
Okay.
And then it just crashed. I can't. Maybe I have to reboot before I can demonstrate it because the memory kind of gets corrupted in the iPhone after a while, and you have to apps have problems. So anyway, it sniffs the Wi-Fi access points. All it cares about is their names, and it composes music based on the names of all the access points.
What?
It finds out. It composes these little jazz, stupid little jazz songs.
Okay.
Based on the letters and the names of the access points it finds.
How do you meet your neighbors?
Through that?
No. Just how in general do you meet your neighbors?
I don't. I hate neighbors.
You ready?
So I don't. Yeah.
You name your Wi-Fi access point that's open and available for anybody something really, really odd.
Oh, okay.
Like Fertile Phyllis?
There's one in my neighborhood that I can't, that's ambiguous.
Okay.
T-H-E-R-A-P-E-B-O-X.
Okay.
And I can never figure out whether that's the rape box or or therapy box. I have no idea who it is, who it belongs to, or anything about it, but it just always shows up strongly in my neighborhood.
It's probably therapy box.
But the rape box sounds more interesting.
It does sound interesting. It's just nice. Okay.
So anyway, and I'm trying to figure out what do I have as a useful application.
But
the new Google. The new Google.
Okay.
The iPhone, there's always been a Google application.
I don't have that one yet. I heard about it today.
Well, but it's more a talking thing. You don't have a microphone.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
But there's a new version of the Google search application for the iPhone, which was never really the most necessary thing in the world because you could just kind of do the same kinds of things with the browser, just doing a Google search.
Okay.
But the Google application would search your contacts, and it was kind of a front end for different Google services, and it gave a little bit more front end information than just the Google website would.
Okay.
And they've now enhanced that in the newest release that you just go to the App Store and upgrade to it or install it if you've never had it before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free. They've enhanced it to voice search. So when you first go into the application, everyone will tell you if you read about it that it's based on the accelerometers. You move the iPhone up to your ear.
Yes.
And then you'll hear a beep and you start talking. And then just stop and be quiet for a second. It'll assume you're done. And it'll try to figure out what you said in the context of a Google search. You know, it uploads your speech to the Google servers. They say that don't just figure out the words, but they try to figure out words that would make sense based on what people would search for in Google and especially where you're located.
Okay.
And stuff like that. And it'll automatically apply your location. So if you just say pizza restaurant.
Okay.
It'll figure that out and it'll come up with but it doesn't speak the results. It just comes up with a text list of pizza restaurants. And then if it's a business that it finds, it doesn't have to be a local search. You can do a Google search for anything.
Okay.
By speech, but it'll figure out local commonly used words better. It may totally misunderstand other things.
Okay.
But when it shows the name of a business, it'll have a click to dial it button next to it and a click to get directions to it.
Okay.
Next to each business listing that it finds.
All right.
So that's actually a pretty useful thing.
That's very useful.
Except it doesn't really understand me all that well, but it worked.
Okay.
Kind of. So.
Cool.
I guess that's all.
That's it?
I guess I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. So the total came out to be $36. Well, the total with tip came out to be $42.81.
I met Chris Bernay for lunch, and it was about that much or something.
Really? So. Yeah. So if we split it down the middle, the tip is $3, and that total that becomes between the two of us with tip included $21.40 per person.
Okay, so let me use a credit card.
What's that?
Oh, so this is being stable. This thing is crashing. This is a Sniff Jazz Box. It's not really. See, I'm not. You know, it's not really set up right. I think I have Wi-Fi turned off. Because it's not really finding anything, it's just not making any sense. But it'll if you have it turned off, if you don't have a Wi-Fi or can't find a Wi-Fi, it'll may generate by itself the words flashing by about Friday.
Sorry.
What? But it'll generate the words try to walk into an area that has Wi-Fi. And then it'll play music based on those words or something.
Nice.
It's just kind of stupid. Anyway.
Cute. Okay, well, Mark, thanks for doing the show again.
Oh, sure.
We've done this now. You realize we're getting close to our what, 1 year?
Is it? Yes. Doing these shows?
Okay. Yeah, it'll be okay. 1 year, I think, around in December. So okay. We're like about a month away.
Huh, okay.
We should celebrate somehow. I'm not sure how.
Yeah. Yeah. This is awkward. I just downloaded this. I don't know how to use this. I'll talk about this some other week, but here's an application called Ocarina that you play music on the iPhone and stuff. Anyway, that's a long story. But you blow into the Ocarina and then...
That's cool. You're
supposed to use both hands on it and stuff.
Okay.
Anyway.
Nice. Okay.
But,
So we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary.
That's so cute. Oh, I put the wrong credit card.
You put your library card in there.
No, it's my business. That's my business one. For Mark Bernay Enterprises. Mark Bernay Worldwide Domination Enterprises.
I'm going to dominate. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show, because it's you who makes us come together. Actually, that's not true. We just do it anyway.
Yeah. It's just fun to play.
But it's good to have an audience of two people.
Right.
And, yeah, our shows are getting
Hi, long. Uncle Brucey. Hi, Meanie Hound.
Hi, Dre.
Anybody else?
Hi, people from work.
Sammy.
Sammy.
Right.
Who else? Anyway.